T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I'm Zach Clark, and this is Craft Beer Conversations Uncut. This week, my search for the best of the best when it comes to Metro Detroit craft beers and beyond took me to the Downey Brewing Company in Dearborn, where I spoke to co-owner Daniel Downey.
Daniel, we're sitting here. We're at Downey Brewing Company. As soon as I found it, you opened the door, and it took my breath away. I mean, this is like everybody's favorite garage.
It's like kind of having beers with fans in your garage.
Between the big pieces of art on the wall, or maybe some of the pieces from Joe Louis Arena, or even, I think, this American flag back here, you said it was from a battleship. Just kind of tell me about how you assembled some of this stuff, because I love it. A lot of it is gravity. You said you don't think you bought anything in the room, which
I
love.
Yeah, I don't think we bought anything in the room. It was all just donated through friends, or we picked up a little piece there, we picked up another piece there, we combined some of it. It's true, each piece has a story, and then collectively, like, that's what creates the ambiance that you're seeing.
How does the family dynamic work? Because this is, as a lot of breweries are, this is a family business, and it's a family business in more ways than one, that this business started inside of another family business, right?
Yeah, it's multi-generational here. The building that we're in, my grandfather owns. They had an existing business that they ran for 30 years, and then my dad actually started to end up running that business, and then he's now involved with us running this business. So it's myself, my dad, and my brother are the three owners, but now my mom is also on board full time.
What's that like? I mean, basically what you guys have at work is your family dinner table. When you were kids, more or less.
We pretty much do. When there's disagreements, we can, at the end of the day, all love each other and settle them, so it's easy to get around that.
Tell me about the crowdfunding campaign. This isn't the only bar that's been started this way. This is the first one that I've been to that has been the beneficiary of a crowdfunding campaign. I'm a big sports guy, and this bar is reflective of that, too. You guys had a buzzer beater.
Yeah.
More or less.
It was an extreme buzzer beater. So, like, yeah, this thing was seriously bootstrapped. We had a location, and we had a team. The only thing we didn't have yet was, like, enough money to get started. So we did this back in 2014 when Kickstarter was kind of just getting going. Yeah. And we're like, all right, let's jump on and do it. We made this video. It's like a parody of, like, the Boondock Saints, because it was, you know, myself, my brother, and a dad, kind of like the Boondock Saints. The Kickstarter is all or nothing. So if you don't go over the line, you get nothing. And we were coming down to the last few hours, and we were still under our goal, and then somebody kicked in $3,000 within the last, I would say, couple of minutes, just to put us over the edge, and like, that was just pandemonium for us.
Do you know who it was?
I do know who it was. He wanted to remain anonymous, so I think I guess I'll just honor that.
Do you remember the moment when you saw it click over to what you needed it within the time frame?
Remember that. So actually, this was 2014, so I had just returned from college. I was living at home, and so was my brother. So we were at the family dinner table, kind of like thinking, I'm like, all right, like, how, like, what are we gonna do? We're so close. We're actually like trying to call people, and then that moment came in, and it was just like, boom, like, we've made it. It was like, let's pop the champagne, let's celebrate it. We made it.
On that, how has the passion for, at some point, somebody in this room was a home brewer.
Yeah.
What doesn't happen often is a lot of people homebrew, a lot of people don't own bars.
Right.
So what was the transition or the journey like from the home brewing, the doing it for funsies, to, you know, doing it for real?
There's two main home brewers. That would be my brother and my dad. So my dad started home brewing in the 90s, and he was doing that both as my brother and myself were growing up. And then I think that's where my brother actually started taking a passion for homebrewing. And then he really got into homebrewing while we were at Michigan State, where, you know, when you're underage, you can buy the supplies to make beer, but you can't buy beer. So he started doing that, made several beers in, you know, the college basements. I think that's actually some of the recipes have made it and become some of our beers here. Then he worked in a homebrew store immediately after college. And then this is kind of where he wanted to, like, go definitely into, like, let's start a brewery. And there was, like, a big wave of craft breweries starting around that time, too. And I had also studied business, and I wanted to work for myself and be an entrepreneur. It wasn't necessarily going to be a brewery, but with his passion for brewing and then my passion for starting a business and then the location, like, we put enough pieces together. We're like, all right, we can do this.
How does it feel to come into this building every day knowing that a lot of your family, or at least part of it, was built on the other side through what your grandfather did. I mean, that's got to be a pretty, I don't know if heartwarming is the right word, but it's got to be a pretty cool feeling.
It's an extremely cool feeling. I mean, I feel grateful. There's no way that I don't think we could have pulled this off had we not had a space to do it. So, and then him allowing us and saying yes, you know, that's very fortunate for us.
Tell me about the business end, and that's more your area of expertise. But I mean, I read your website, I read the bio, and
yeah,
most people don't just start a business and say, you know, we're just going to do this and we're going to be on the no plan plan. But it seemed, but it seems like you guys went far beyond that, and maybe this was more you than it was anybody else. But I mean, there was a lot of thought and planning, I think, beyond more than what I'm used to seeing going into this before it started.
Yeah, there was. I mean, my background is marketing, and so I really wanted to have a full-out plan before we kind of got involved. And also, we had 2 years before we could get up and running. The Kickstarter was in 2014, and then the licensing process took 2 years to start it. Like, our grand opening was not until November of 2016. Mm. So I had 2 years to think about this. During that time, I really sat down and wrote. It was like an 80-page comprehensive business plan, something that I learned how to do in school, and I transitioned immediately right into doing it in the real world.
And so the brew house is within the same room that the tap room is. It's right behind us. Tell me about the brewing process. You guys use a somewhat smaller system, which requires more frequency, right? It puts you in a position where you can have fresher beers, but it also puts you in a position where you have to sometimes brew probably more frequently than you'd want to. Tell me about how you guys balance all that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a blessing and a curse. So when we were first getting started, we had to decide if we were going to make the decision to have a 7-barrel brew house or a 3-barrel brew house. We decided to go with the 3-barrel brew house, and while this gives us an opportunity to make several different kinds of beer every time we brew, the amount of beer that we get each time is very little. So that's the challenge. And that actually has been our biggest challenge from day one, is keeping up with the amount of beer, just because the labor of making the beer is so intense.
Is that a good problem to have? I mean, I mean, you don't want to have it, but it means that people are consuming your product.
Yeah. As far as problems go, that is a good one. But nonetheless, it is a problem, and it needs to be solved.
How about distribution? You guys can be found at a variety of places across the metro area. How much of your business is that, and what made you decide? Some people do distribution, some people don't.
Yeah.
The people that don't do it have very good reasons for not doing it. The people that do it have great reasons for getting into it. Tell me about why you did it and the benefit of it.
Yeah, so our business is, right now it's about 75-25, 7% in the tap room, 25% outside. When we first started, it was 90% tap room, 10% outside. And then we kind of had a big splash when we opened, and it continued to grow for a while, but then it sort of like plateaued, and we needed to sort of spike that business. And one way that we decided to do that was to increase like our beer sales through going to outside bars. This sells some of the volume there, but it also hits a good customer base. Well, they'll see this beer in a bar, and it's like, okay, it's really not made very far from here. I can also go and check them out in the tap room.
Are you guys in control of where the beer goes?
100%,
I mean, is it direct to
We self-distribute. We pick the bars that we want to be in, or they actually obviously want us to be in there too. But we originally started with just like kind of craft beer only bars. And then from there, we've sort of diversified out.
Do you have goals or places you'd like to see it? I mean, because I think when I was looking, some of them are in like Aloft Hotel. If you put them in a craft beer bar in one neighborhood, the same people are going to come in over and over again, which is fine.
Yeah.
But if you get them into more commercialized spaces like that, like you said, it opens your eyes and says, hey, I'm not that far. I can just shoot down and check it out.
The Aloft Hotel is in downtown Detroit. Detroit, so that was more of the reason why that we're kind of in there. The main markets that we're hitting right now are downtown Detroit and downriver, and Dearborn, where we are as well. Dearborn is in almost like a weird black hole of breweries, so we're kind of geographically just spreading out and staying as local as we can to the brewery.
What's that like? You know, you go to places where the breweries kind of clump together. You go to bigger places like Ann Arbor or even smaller places like Oxford, and you'll see two or three of them, and it draws people in. What's it like to be like you're the island, right? You're the oasis. What's that like?
That's where we get a lot of draw from, kind of downriver. There's not a lot of breweries over here, so like we get that draw here, and that's been very helpful for our business.
Do you guys have an average customer? And I ask this because, one, we're in Dearborn, and two, we're in a industrial setting. So if I'm driving to get groceries, I'm not going to see you out in a storefront. But that doesn't mean that I don't know that you're here. Do you guys have an average customer, or do you have a target customer, maybe?
As far as the target customer goes, it's your kind of typical, like, it would be, like, male. Like
me.
Yeah, like you, like, mid-30s. But as far as our kind of average customer, a lot of it, this spread through word of mouth, both through, like, you know, us telling our friends, and then also, like, since it is like a multi-generational thing, like our parents doing the same thing. So we have like, there's a baseline of people that are similar to my age, 31, and then also my parents, they're about 60. So like those two groups of people are kind of like our targets.
Without naming off the beers, how would you describe Downey's offerings? Do you guys have a philosophy or a goal or at least a mindset that when you're standing over the tanks, like this is what we want our beers to express?
We like to have a flagship style all across the board. So we always have a Pilsner, an IPA, an Irish Red, and a White Stout. And then to complement that, we have rotational seasonals. For right now, it's the winter, so we have like a very dark traditional stout.
When you guys are rotating, I mean, like you said, it's winter. What do you think about? Because I could just say dark beer, and that would envelope about, I don't know, 500 different styles.
Yeah.
When you guys rotate, do you want your rotators to complement the flagship? Do you want them to be different to show people that you can branch out? I mean, is there a – with the rotators,
it's a little bit of both. So depending on the season, we'll try to brew something to season. But then we also like to do something one of a kind to sort of show that – the diversity of beers that we can make. So we'll make maybe double IPAs, triple IPAs, Hefeweizens, something like that that's different to our flagships that are more like very true to style and kind of what you see is what you get.
Yeah, and I wonder, I'm looking at your beer offerings right here, I wonder if the Canna or the Canna isn't that. I mean, you see, the New Englands are very popular, but I don't think I've ever seen one that's sessionable. That's not really what they are, and so I wonder if that's kind of the...
That was something that we tried as an experiment, like a sessionable New England IPA or like a snippa is what we were calling
snippa.
It.
I like it. I like it.
I don't know if other breweries have done that. So it's kind of a counterintuitive to what a New England IPA is. It's supposed, you know, like a big kind of like heavy IPA. But we've noticed that sessionable beers are like a trend. So we sort of tried to like combine both of them. You know, that was just an experimental beer that we went out and did.
How much of what you guys do is experimental? I know that at the core of it, all of this is an experiment to a certain extent. I mean, you have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen. But you have your flagships. But I would assume even some of those. I mean, you said a couple of the recipes made it from your basement at Michigan State. Like, those had to have been the definition of experimentation. Yeah.
They all start out as experiments, and then some of these experiments turn out to be winners. For example, like the Mr. IPA, that wasn't the first IPA we made, but that was one that like came out of the gate and just everybody loved it. We could not make it fast enough. That one has ended up as a flagship. And then all of the other flagships, it's pretty much just a same story. We wanted to have flagship Pilsners, so we like keep experimenting with a Pilsner until one will work.
You and I were walking around here before we flipped the on-air light on, and you guys have bottles of wine. Are you guys making, fermenting, all that jazz? Like, and let me ask, and I don't want to be rude, but we're in this like really raw warehouse drinking beer, and all of a sudden I see like really nice bottles of wine. Like, talk to me about that.
Yeah, so we originally got into the wine because we wanted to make cider, and cider falls under, you need a winemaker's license to do it. Yep. So we got that, and they're like, all right, well, we have this winemaker's license. We might as well also make some wine. And then my dad, that's his gig. He actually makes it partially for my mom, and then he's also like a talented winemaker as well.
Is that something that you can get by the bottle here? Do I get it by the glass?
You can get it by both, by the glass and by the bottle.
Do you feel like, and I know that the reasons for doing this, like you said, they make total sense, but do you get people, and I use my wife as an example all the time. She doesn't like it, but too bad. She doesn't like beer.
Yeah.
I obviously really enjoy it, so I like to go to places that have something that she will hold on to that's not me trying to force beer down her throat. Yeah. I know that sounds terrible. but I wonder if part of... if you've seen an offshoot of that gives people another avenue that if you're going to bring somebody with you, because, I mean, if you're in a group of 10, the odds are that one or two people, you know, they may not like the craft beer, but you want them all to come.
Yeah, that's exactly why we wanted to get into cider, and that's why we diversified into wine. And we may try to go down, like, a couple other experiments. Mm-hmm. We'll see where we go from here.
You guys have – this building, by the way, it's enormous. Yeah. Where we're sitting itself isn't huge. It's big, but the building itself is, what do you say, like 15,000 square feet?
I think it's grand total, it's 15.
Huge. You have possession for the most part of all of it. I know that there's some detritus in certain areas, but like, what do you do with all of this space? Most of the time when I go into a brewery, they're like, man, I wish I had more space. And this is like the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, so we have the exact opposite of that, bro. We have a ton of space. A lot of it is still under development. The next part of the project that we're working on is maybe like six or seven 1,000 square foot space. I think we're going to turn into event space. Who knows what we'll do over there. Comedy shows, music shows. We're talking about doing some full-hanger stuff over there. So we have that going for us, and I think that's going to be a way to bring people in because this is a warehouse. We're in a warehouse district. We're out of the way of main traffic, so we don't have that. So we've got to do something to like bring people to this island that we're on.
You guys do other things already. In fact, I walked by it. You guys have, and again, I love the juxtaposition of like a really industrial warehouse and like yoga.
Yeah.
Right. And again, that's something I see a lot of places too. That has to help bring in the little things you do to bring people in, draw people to the product, and hopefully it gets them to stay.
Tell me about that. I mean, every little thing helps. So we have something called a Dean's List, which is like our mug club. And one of the members on the mug club, she's a yoga instructor. And this was probably like shortly after we opened. She's like, hey, you know, like beer and yoga is a thing. I'm like, all right, you know what? Like, let's try it. Let's see what happens. So like we set up this big thing. We're like, all right, we'll do like a free yoga one day. I think we had maybe 20 or 30 people show up to that. They're like, all right, yeah, I get it. Like since then, I've been doing it regularly on Sundays. And sometimes in the fall, we do it on Thursdays as well.
You guys had bottled for a while. It's really cumbersome. It offers, at times, very little benefit. What did you think you learned from that experience? And in that realm, where do you go from here, if anywhere at all?
Yeah, so like when we were first getting started, we're like, we don't know how exactly we're going to have to sell this beer. Is it going to be only sold by the pint? Or is it going to be sold just to bars through the keg? Or is it bottles as well? So we're like, all right, we'll kind of maybe we'll get all three going. We'll see what works, what doesn't, and then we'll go from there. Most of our beer is still sold by the pint. Some of it is by kegs to bars. Mm-hmm. And then like a little bit of bottling we've tried to mess around with, but it just has not really worth the time to invest in it. So we do want to have some options to go. So we're talking about, by the end of this quarter, setting up like a canning operation, a small canning operation.
I feel like with the bottling, and I don't know the business end of it, but it's really time consuming and it's not cheap unless you can do it at a higher volume with a rapid sell rate.
Yeah.
There's just not a lot in it for you other than the ability to push your product in a place where people wouldn't normally see it.
Right, yeah.
Where do you think you guys, and again, we're in a unique location, not just in the building, but in Dearborn and close to the Downriver community. Where do you think you guys fit in to the Michigan craft beer scene? I mean, this is a scene that it couldn't be any hotter.
It is crazy.
And the quality continues to improve. How do you feel like Downey fits into the profile of a Michigan craft brewery?
So, like, when we started, there was, I think, 300 breweries. Now there's like almost maybe 400 breweries. So it's just exploding. So you have to be very unique in both your beer and in your atmosphere. So that's what we're trying to create here. We have this unique space and we're continued to develop that through the event space that I'm talking about. And then also through our beers.
Remember, when you're driving down Prospect Street, that big bright red door, that's where you're going to stop. And that's where you will find the Downey Brewing Company. This place is fabulous. Thank you so much for having us out.
Yeah, thanks.
Craft Beer Conversations are brand new every Friday, so don't forget to subscribe to WWJ Plus wherever you get your podcasts, and check for Kyle Beery's feature on WWJNewsRadio.com with Craft Beer Conversations Uncut. Zach Clark, WWJ News Radio 950.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.